Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 113, recorded January 25th, 2012. All over the Mac. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Omnia Audio and the Omnia AXE, Windows software that offers audio processing and audio encoding for live web streaming. On the web at omniaaudio.com/AXE. Hi, and welcome into another episode of This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Glad that you're here. This is a show where we talk about, well, you know, radio tech, but that includes a lot of technology. It used to be just, you know, tubes and consoles and transmitters and stay levels and level devils, but it's a little bit different nowadays. It seems like engineers are called upon to do all manner of things. So let's call upon all manner of engineers. First of all, from the Hudson Valley of New York, it's our friend from the Northeast, Tom Ray. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good, Kirk. How about yourself?
Lovely.
Excellent. Well, of course you are. You have more hair than I do, according to the chat room, so you have to be lovely. But anyway, no, I'm VP of Engineering at Buckley Broadcasting, WOR Radio in New York City, and I'll be back in a minute because, speaking of things to do, I need to go get a plunger. No, seriously.
Yeah, right. So as VP of Engineering for Buckley, now we talk about you engineering for WOR, and that's a big honking AM station. That thing, you got to keep that on the air 24/7, 365 or something like that.
Oh, you bet.
But you also engineer for some FM stations, so you've got plenty of background in that realm.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. Matter of fact, the closest FM that Buckley owns is up in Hartford, WDRC-FM 102.9. Actually, the station I started at, and a very historic station because it's arguably the first commercial FM station in the world, and they argue all the time, and we can get into this in another show if you want. They argue with another station in town all the time about whether or not they are actually the first commercial FM station in the world because of the way things shook out in the 1950s.
That's an interesting argument to have, but does it really mean anything? We were the first. No, we were the first. No, but how long ago was that? Well, okay, it was about 100 years ago.
It is an interesting argument. Probably doesn't mean much, but in a nutshell, what it amounts to is the station had been on the air since 1939. It was part of the original Yankee network. Matter of fact, there is a recording that's on the internet, and I'd have to look it up to find out where it is. But it is the actual Yankee network when they linked up a whole bunch of FM stations in the Northeast, and it has them all saying goodnight, including Major Armstrong, including our station in Hartford. In the 1950s, the station in Hartford said, you know, FM, it's not going to do anything. So they sold the station to this other group in Hartford, and they kept the station on the air. And come late 1950s, they said, you know, we kind of made a mistake. We ought to put an FM station on the air. So while the call letters for the original FM and the new FM are the same, because, you know, WDRC FM was once again WDRC FM, the other station took over, and technically that facility is the one that was on the air in 1939. That's where the argument is.
Is this much different than the argument about who invented radio? Was it Nathan B. Stubblefield, or was it Marconi, or was it, you know, some other guy?
That's pretty much the same. And actually, the interesting thing, too, is the original building is still being used on Meriden Mountain by the other station, which happens to be WHCN. And the original tower, it's just a monopole, is still up there on the mountain. And if I'm not mistaken, it was actually in use and held an antenna for yet another station on the mountain. I think it was 10 years ago when they took that antenna off. So that tower was still in use up until 10 years ago.
There's plenty of history we can cover, and we will sometime. I'm kind of a what have you done for me lately kind of guy. So let's check in with Chris Tarr, see if he's done anything lately. Hi, Chris. You're the engineer from Muckwonago, Wisconsin, engineer in Milwaukee. How you doing?
Good. I haven't done anything lately. I mean, I'm just hanging around, taking a nap, you know, that kind of thing.
I doubt that.
I am the director of engineering for Intercom's radio stations in Milwaukee and Madison, Wisconsin. Also contributing writer to Radio Guide magazine. I run a couple of websites. I pretty much got my hands in everything.
Well, speaking of having your hands in everything, I thought I had a good segue here, and I don't know, maybe I don't. We got a few subjects to touch on, and I want to hit a couple of them real fast. You guys are familiar with QR codes, right? It's not really a radio thing, but plenty of radio stations are using them to direct people to their websites. QR codes, thumbs up, thumbs down. Are they going to do anything? Is it worthwhile? Is it going to be the QCAT? And go away like Radio Shack's QCAT. What do you think, Tar?
That's a good question. And you know, from a guy who actually had a QCAT and loved to hack them, you know, it's an interesting concept. I tend to think that with NFC technology, things like that, that we're going to see. I think QR codes are kind of an interstitial step to something else. Having said that, I have a QR code that I use. It brings to a website with all my contact information. I've been known on, you know, see TV ads and stuff with QR codes. I've been known to scan them. Sitting Heinz Ketchup, I believe it is, or that has QR codes in the back of their bottles at restaurants. I do that as well. So I think right now they're great. They're great for getting out a lot of information without having to type in long web addresses. You can pack a lot of different types of information in them. But I just have this feeling that this isn't a permanent thing, that this is just kind of an intermediary something until the next thing comes around.
Yeah, like I have to agree with that. Although it's interesting I think they're still useful where you're not near a computer. You're not going to be near a computer, but you are near your cell phone. And so you can scan it and do that. I got a question. What happens if you try to just take a picture of a QR code?
Well, most camera apps now see it as a QR code and try to look it up. But you should be able to, depending on the program that you're using to scan code, some will scan from a picture you've taken. So,
oh yeah,
it should work.
Oh. We at Telos last year, we put QR codes on everybody's business card, and if this wasn't the little simple QR codes that just have a URL embedded in them, no, these had the whole V card. So these were some big honking QR codes that if we reduced them to less the size than about an inch and a quarter by inch and a quarter, they weren't reproducible anymore. But I don't know. Some people thought they're cute and cool, but I think the cool's wearing off. Tom, WOR, you guys use QR codes for anything?
At the moment, no. We haven't had them on the website, and don't know if we have any plans for them. We just haven't gotten into that for whatever reason.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know. If I haven't yet found like the ultimate app for them. We thought about what if broadcast equipment or consumer goods had a QR code on the back that would take you to the support website. Would that or
to
the man?
Cool, but honestly, though, where I see Q cards kind of fitting in the grand scheme of things is when you have a smartphone, it is really not a lot of fun when you have to go in and try to type in a web address to get somewhere, especially a long one, you know, and you got big thumbs like I do. So I really kind of see a QR code as almost like a shortcut or a helper for mobile devices, you know, where, today I went to lunch today, and on the door of the restaurant, you know, was a big scan me with a QR code. Now that's something where, yeah, okay, if I had my smartphone with me, I'd go take a snap of it and see where it led me. And, you know, I in a place like on a fixed piece of equipment, a lot of times it's just easier to sit down at the computer and type it in and bring it up that way. But I do see for mobile technology where QR codes can be pretty helpful, especially if it's, again, you know, like if it's a product where you don't have a simple URL to get there and you can type it in on your phone, to have a QR code where you can just snap it and your web, you know, takes you right to the website. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wasn't. The chat room thinks I'm asking out of ignorance, and sometimes I am ignorant. I do use them, you know, a fair amount of the time. I will scan them with a barcode scanner app, and yeah, it's kind of interesting. I thought I'd throw that out there because some folks from Radio World Online, there was an editorial story or a guest commentary about QR codes. Thinks that they're just a passing fad, gonna move along. Although you're right, it's great to have some way to take your cell phone, and of course there's near field technology, but that is near field technology an active transaction, or is it a transponder transaction?
It's a transponder.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, which would still work, but you'd have to, you'd be one of those hold your phone up here to go to the website kind of thing. So it's kind of six of one, half dozen the other.
Gotcha. Well, certainly nothing cheaper to reproduce than a QR code. That's pretty inexpensive. Hey, the next thing I want to ask, headline, Clear Channel drops radio from its name. What does that imply?
I think it's exactly what it implies.
Exactly.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I think that, it's I've always had this thing like Radio Disney, for example. I've always kind of had this thing where Radio Disney exists simply as a promotional vehicle for the Disney company, for all of their technologies and things like that. And I think Clear Channel is on the right track. I mean, there's no fooling that radio is always going to be the core of what they do. But, they also have this, this exciting new movement with iHeartRadio and that brand. And I think it really kind of reflects some of the things that they're doing. Are they giving up on radio? I think the people who are the glasses half empty people are probably looking at it that way. But I don't think that's the case. I think that, along the lines of a Disney, it's kind of a vertical integration. And, it's just kind of the inevitable where the lines are starting to blur between, the terrestrial signals and the phone signals or the streams. It's all becoming one. And I think the name change reflects that.
They're also into other things, just besides the iHeartRadio. If I'm not mistaken, and maybe I'm thinking of CBS. I mean, they have billboards, they have other things. You've got the websites now, and the websites are a big function of the radio station. It's yet another information portal, in addition to the on-air signal, in addition to the web stream, in addition to whatever else, email blasts and chat rooms and whatever else you have. So I don't know. It makes sense. You hate to see that word radio go away, but things are evolving.
In reality, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we're all evolving. Intercom, what we do is, especially with our streaming, is treated as important as our on-air product. I mean, if a streamer goes down, bells and whistles and alarms and everything, and we go and we get it back running again. It's become as important a product to us as the on-air stuff. And I think as time goes on, there's always going to be radio, and radio is always going to be the primary focus. But the web streams and the web players and the iHeartRadios of the world, what are they at their base? Radio. And I don't think that changes. But I think that even with the public, there's something about the phrase radio and TV and that seems kind of old. And I think that's the other part of this process is I think people were still treating radio companies as radio companies and not realizing that we've moved on to many different types of technology, some that are great, some that aren't so great. And the bottom line is we're as much about technology, new technology as we are old technology. And I think that, that was one of the things too that precipitated the move with Clear Channel.
Does it appear that Clear Channel is leading the way in this regard? Is there iHeartRadio now that they're bringing on other partners, not Clear Channel stations, but other non-Clear Channel stations? Is that a leadership role? Is the rest of the industry going to follow suit with that, or are others in the industry, blazing their own trails and in some kind of meaningful distribution?
It's interesting because we kind of actually had that chat on Twirt maybe a year and a half ago. In fact, I remember Chris Tobin and I discussing that, how we both feel at some point it's inevitable that it all comes down to one app. It's just going to have to, whether that's iHeartRadio or something else. But, to have to download six or seven apps to listen to your favorite radio stations is a bit cumbersome. I will say I saw a presentation that Jeff Littlejohn did on how they handle digital, and it's fantastic. That is one thing. I don't want to make it sound like the only thing, but it's one thing that Clear Channel does very well that a lot of people don't realize is the back end that they have in place for streaming and for iHeartRadio is fantastic. So I think we'll see some more of this. I don't know if everybody's going to get on board, but, I know Tobin and I, a long time ago, were discussing that, we think it's inevitable at some point that we'll see some more consolidation with that.
Tom, you agree?
I agree. There's like I said, everything's converging, with us here on radio. And I was actually reading that article you sent a list over, so you caught me off guard, Kirk.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. But I agree with what Chris said. It's everything's coming together, and it's getting harder and harder to just separate things out anymore, and it all becomes one thing. That's how we have to work these days.
You know, I do agree with this notion that radio might benefit from a kind of a one app to rule them all. You know, one app that the radio industry perhaps endorsed and put out as an industry, but it's got to be cool. It can't be something designed by committee. It's got to be something designed with, and maybe the iHeartRadio app will become this, or maybe somebody else's app will become this, but an app where you can pick it, you can tune in any radio station plus other interesting media streams as well. I mean, it better pick up the audio of twit.tv as well as my local radio stations, right?
Yeah.
And the audio from other such networks, really be interesting if it would pick up, free versions of XM or Sirius, maybe with more commercials or maybe with lower quality, or maybe you pay money and you get that on the app. The point is one app. Maybe it's got chat room, and whenever I change channels, bam, I can choose to also change chat rooms and go to a chat room. Let's say I'm listening to Howard Stern, wherever he happens to be broadcasting from in 5 years from now. And when I tune to a Howard Stern channel, I get the Howard Stern chat room. Lord knows what happens in there. But if I tune into, the Dr. Laura or the Rush Limbaugh chat room or Jerry Doyle or whoever, I'm connected with a chat room of people who are also listening at the same time, similar to what's going on right here on the Twit network, where you've got a chat room related to what's going on right here. Wouldn't that be interesting? And you could friend, if you really like things that certain people said in that chat room, you could friend them, and carry the conversation on outside of the radio experience.
And here, here's where the technology comes into play. Here's where the engineers come into play. I do think that it's up to us to enable that kind of technology. We started with our stations doing real-time texting back and forth, doing some chat things, one of the things we actually had planned to do, and by the time we got it all together, it was too late for that season, but we'll end up doing it, is putting our morning show on live during American Idol and streaming that, and kind of they'll be doing the riff through the whole show while watching it. And in real time, you can watch a show with them and get their running commentary. Because, again, radio is about a shared experience. It's about a lot of people together doing something together in a shared experience. And as engineers, a programmer comes to me and says, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we could do that? My job isn't to go, well, boy, that seems really hard. My job is to go, yeah, that's fantastic. Let's see if we can make that work. And we get together and we do that. And, I think a lot of these technologies that are going to be coming down the line are social. And I think that, we can, as engineers, we can always do things the way we've always done them, stick our head in the sand and go, well, it's not a transmitter, therefore I don't really want to deal with it. Or we can look at that as a challenge and go, hey, this is something new. This is something we could jump in and really make happen and, do your homework. And that's why I participate in TWRD. And that's why I do, spend a lot of time researching new things and new technology, because I want to be able to come to them and go, yeah, as a matter of fact, not only can we do that with the cameras, but we could have, this real-time thing going on over here that would be really neat. So, I think that, Clear Channel's move to that makes some sense in that way. I think that, to Jeff Littlejohn's credit, there was a guy who started out as, they're engineering and moved into new technology and opened those doors. And I think as engineers, it's up to us for whoever we're working for, even if it's a contract job or whatever, to be on the forefront of those technologies to help them move into this new world that we're dealing with, where, we're not only radio stations, we're TV stations, we're producing video content, we do social media, we do social networking. Those are all things that we do now in addition to just playing music or talking on the radio. And as engineers, if we're not on top of that, you know, we're doing our respective employers a huge disservice.
You know, part of what keeps driving this idea that has occurred to me about having an app with a chat room associated with the programming is that right now, we as radio listeners, whether it's frequent radio listening or infrequent, we experience radio listening quite separate from everybody else. And, you know, well, of course, back when the radio was the only appliance that provided entertainment in your house, you know, the family would gather around the radio, right? And to listen to the Lone Ranger or the Great Gildersleeve or the symphony concert. Or imagine Elvis gyrating his hips as he sang his songs. But now when we listen to the radio, we're oftentimes in our cars or in our offices, and it's such a disconnected experience. We don't really feel much of a sense of community. Now, I would argue that during the 60s and 70s and part of the 80s, we could feel a sense of community with the disc jockey because they were more personality-based at that time. It seems like we had a lot of personalities back then, and now we have just a few. Some of them are quite superstar personalities, but we have just a lot fewer personalities. Most radio is not personality-based nowadays. So what if we could reconnect all the listeners to a radio station or whatever the internet stream is, but whatever you're listening to with this app, could we turn it into a bit of a lean forward type of experience where we're actively, you know, participating? When I'm traveling around, walking around, driving around, going from store to store, picking up the kid from school, you know, I'm checking Foursquare, seeing who checked in where here and there. I check Facebook. I'm looking at my Twitter feed, see what's going on. What if instead of one of those things, I was socializing by seeing what people were commenting on the local talk show host, maybe Phil Valentine here in Nashville, for example. What if we were commenting on him? That would be pretty interesting to me. Wouldn't that be interesting to other folks as well? Couldn't that be a popular application for smartphones and the broadcast industry, the radio broadcast industry?
I think and I think it would increase participation in radio talk shows. You know, the unfortunate part with a lot of radio talk shows is you get the same guys call in all the time, and sometimes it's the same guy who uses a different name. But now with caller ID, you can tell where he's calling from, and you can tell it's the same guy. But I think it might. There are some people who just don't want to call in. There are some people who just, you know, they're a little too shy to get on the phone and talk. But they'll text you. They'll email you. And they do that all the time. I think that it'd be a big help. I think it'd be a big plus.
Chris, what were we about to say?
I was just about to say you're absolutely right. And that as engineers, that's where we have to come in and look at these things. And again, you know, we're dealing with people who a lot of times are just radio people, and that's pretty much what they know. And, you know, as far as they're concerned, the internet runs on magic fairy dust and stuff. So, you know, it's up to us to kind of figure all that out and come to them with these solutions when they talk about these things. And again, I see so many times where, you know, I'll go visit a radio station or talk to, talk to some people in smaller markets that maybe don't have engineers full time, and they go, yeah, I've always wanted to do this. We just have no idea where to start. Or, you know, I've seen other people do this and we don't know where to start. And, you know, that's where I come in and go, well, you know, here's what you need to do. And I held a seminar a while back on SBE, a webinar on streaming radio for people interested in streaming. And I had great conversation during that webinar with the people involved, you know, who really were sitting down for the first time saying, hey, we need to stream our radio station. We didn't even know where to start. And, you know, those are the things that we as a technical people, we need to be on top of so that we can make that happen.
I got to believe that there's something to this idea. I'm not saying I'm the one who has it, but a couple of years ago, I really thought there ought to be an app where I can interact chat-wise with other people listening to the same radio station or net stream, as others. Of course, if it was if your cell phone had an FM radio in it, you could have some interactivity there where you were not using your streaming to do that, but just using your data to look at the chat room back and forth.
I mean, you know, listen, it's simple. Music is a shared experience. You go to a concert with what? thousands of people. You sing along with your friends. You talk about music. It's the common language that bonds us all together. And you know, the more that we know that, the more that we can tie that in with what we're doing. And what we're talking about, and again, our morning shows talk. You know, they try to think about what everybody's talking about, and try to tap into the community that morning. What is everybody talking about? Well, now you know, because everybody's participating. And music comes on. We all, oh, I love this song. I hate this song. Let's talk about this song. It all of a sudden radio, you know, that used to be broadcasting one to many. All of a sudden, kind of becomes one to one, and not only one to one from the person sending to the person receiving, but one to one from people who are receiving to other people who are receiving, and it's a whole new dynamic. It's really kind of exciting if you think about the ramifications and some of the things that could come out of that. It's fantastic.
I just wonder what it's going to take. Hey, somebody in the chat room says, well, hey, you can do that now. I mean, the DJ can tell you to go to a chat room and chat. And yeah, but I'm just looking for a unified experience on my phone or my iPod Touch or my iPad when I'm out mobile, that, you know, one device can play the audio. And, you know, if I hear something interesting or, you know, maybe one of my favorite songs from the past starts playing and I say, oh, I wonder what people say about that. Oh, yeah, they played that at the sock hop or... aging me here, or at the, you know, the high school dances and such, they used to play that down at Club 64. So I just got to believe there's room for a big experience there, and I will. Well, you know what? I've asked Jeff Littlejohn if he could be on our show, and he's working things out with the Clear Channel PR department. They got to make sure, you know, they don't give away proprietary info. So hopefully Jeff would be able to make it on here one day, and he could. Give us some insight as to the inner workings, not only of iHeartRadio, but give us a little insight as to what may be coming up ahead. Hey, real quick, I want to move to a different subject here. And although it certainly has to do with radio, a couple quick ones we'll hit here. You know, the folks at Pandora have been really touting how their listenership and their listener hours have been going up and up and up. And my goodness, they have. It's great service. Pandora is claiming the equivalent of about 700 million hours of listening per month. So that's just shy of a billion listening hours per month. Arbitron, which measures radio listenership, they have a new metric out, and they are saying that Americans listen to radio 14.6 billion hours each month. What? Okay, big difference between 700 million and 14.6 billion, but still, if Pandora is doing, you know, 1/20th, 1/25th of what all radio is, Pandora's doing pretty well. But I think the idea of the story here was to point out that radio is doing very well according to their latest what they call radar data. 14.6 billion hours each month, says Arbitron. Tom, does that? I don't even know how many a billion is. Does that sound right? 14.6 billion hours a month, radio listener.
Well, you know, it could be. I mean, with the amount of radios that are out there, and let's face it, the amount of cars on the road that have radios in them, but you'll probably see things like Pandora's numbers start going up after you get Wi-Fi. Yeah, that becomes more available in cars. Once somebody can take it with them and not have to pull up their smartphone and connect their smartphone by Bluetooth into their system and in the car and make it work, when they can just push a button, boy, opens up a whole new world. I mean, radio is still there. Radio is still live and local. But, you know, how many people have CD players and iPod jacks in their car and satellite radio? Pandora will just be another, you know, tool in the box. And all it can do, I think, is bring their numbers up a bit. But then, no, that 14 billion hours, it would not surprise me in the least. I mean, you would be surprised where people listen to the radio. You listen to it on the job. You take it to the construction site. You put it on in the car. Some people leave it on all night just so there's sound in the house. So
I noticed that Arbitron has come up with some interesting stats about the radio business. Of course, that's what their business is, to measure radio. I don't know that Arbitron does anything else besides measure radio listening. And they point out in this political time, radio reaches 91% of voters. And 70% of Americans tune into radio each day for nearly 2 3/4 hours. So that's,
you know, I didn't realize there were that many commuters in New York.
Well, you know, here's the bottom line that I always get back to when we have these conversations about Pandora, because it drives me batty. Number one is that, you know, still we out-radio Pandora. Pandora, in fact, calls themselves radio. They so want to be thought of as radio. On the other hand, right now, still one of the largest music download, I think I was reading in the App Store, is TuneIn, which is basically streams radio stations. So that's what people are downloading. Number two, is as hip as it is to say Pandora is going to kill radio or whatever, they said that about satellite radio. They said that about CDs. They said that about cassettes, all of which are very similar to Pandora if you think about it. What does Pandora do? It's a jukebox. Okay, well, I've got that with my iPod. I've got that with my CD player. I've got that with all these other things. And what I see is I see a long line of that secondary replacement. I see CDs replacing cassettes, iPods, MP3 players replacing the CDs. I see Pandora replacing the CD, or the iPod, rather. So, you know, I don't want to stick my head in the sand and say, well, they don't exist. But on the other hand, you know, radio is radio, and it always will be. There's a reason why Pandora calls themselves radio, because radio works. I mean, people like listening to the radio. And, you know, you get a lot of tech guys out there. Oh, yeah, aren't you afraid Pandora's going to kill you? Yeah, just like satellite radio killed us. I mean, it's the same thing.
TV, you know, so, killed us too. Remember that one?
Yeah, TV killed us too. And so did the movies. And so did 8-tracks. And so did records. And that's not to say that we have to ignore it and not be on the top of our game. But, you know, I think this whole doom and gloom, just wait till Wi-Fi comes. Well, yeah, it's going to erode some things a little bit, but people still are always going to come back to their local radio station, because there are just some things that we do better than anybody else. And I mean, we have highly trained programmers and announcers and, you know, all these things at our disposal that make us a better radio alternative than something that just plays a lot of music.
Mm. Okay. Can't disagree with you. We've been talking a lot about streaming here. And by the way, if you're listening or watching, you are tuned in to This Week in Radio Tech, episode number 113. I'm Kirk Harnack, and my co-hosts here are Tom Ray from the Hudson Valley of New York, and also Chris Tarr, the engineer for the intercom stations in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Each week, we get together and we talk about radio engineering issues, although sometimes we go off on these tangents and talk about, you know, the things that every engineer knows about, like programming and the radio business and advertising and such.
I do have geek toys we're going to talk about later, so there you go.
Yeah, I was going to tease that. We've got geek toys to talk about coming right up, some show and tell from Chris Tarr. But right now, I want to tell you about our sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech, this episode. It's Omnia Audio. Now, you know Omnia makes plenty of processors for AM and FM, but I want to tell you about the processors, quite a few of them, several of them anyway, that Omnia makes for streaming audio. We've been talking about streaming, and certainly we agree that, you know, hey, in 20 years from now, will there be a need for radio transmitters? I don't know. 50 years from now, will there be a need for that? Will that just be really so old hat that everybody's getting, you know, audio entertainment when they're traveling or in their office? Will they just be getting that from an internet related stream or some other new technology that we don't know about yet? Well, I will tell you this, for a long time to come, coded, encoded audio is here. And I'm talking about anything from, you know, G.722, kind of a voice grade coded audio, to AAC. MP3 will still be around for a long time since it's so ubiquitous. But the AAC standard, even APT audio coding used in a lot of Bluetooth headsets. So coded audio, and what I really mean is psychoacoustically encoded audio, is going to be here a long time. Now, you can argue about its merits as far as audio quality, but at high bit rates, coded audio can sound just fine. In fact, as my friend and boss Steve Church has said, that at high bit rates, AAC audio is just unimpeachable. You just can't say anything bad about it. So it's important, though, if you're going to be putting audio into a coded format, to process that audio and process it appropriately for that transmission medium, whatever kind of coding that it is, or the fact that it is bitrate reduced. And the folks at Omnia offer several choices to do this. First one I want to run you through is this Omnia 8X. This is a device that Omnia makes that is basically, it's eight audio processors in one box. It's live wire in and out. So if you're a live wire facility and you need to have eight channels of audio processing, well, there you go. Hey, Leo's got this at the Twit Network for processing Skype and other audio through the network there. They run it through this Omnia 8X, and each processor is three-band, multi-band, plus look-ahead limiting and some wideband AGC. There's eight processors built right into that. The next product is Omnia AXE. Now, this is the product that we're giving away one of on each of our shows here for a while. If you've retweeted the fact that the show is starting, if you follow me or follow the Tort Show on Twitter, you can retweet that, let your friends know the show's starting, and you'll be eligible to win an Omnia AXE. Now, this is audio processing plus encoding in the same Windows platform software. It runs as a service in Windows. And so, you know, it's pretty reliable, just as reliable as the Windows kernel would be. So it runs as a service. And hey, it's great. All of my radio stations are using Omnia AXE right now. There's a new product from Omnia called Omnia FXE. This is a file-based audio processor and encoder or re-encoder, if that's what you need. We had some big online streaming networks tell us that, hey, we don't have time to real-time process all these songs and podcasts that we're putting onto our file servers. We need to process them faster than real time. And so Frank Foti and his team went to work, and they created Omnia FXE, a file-based audio processor with re-encoding to as one of several different formats. And finally, the ultimate in audio processing for streaming, and that's the Omnia One Multicast. Now, this is the processor that the Twit Network uses, for example, as their final processor for streaming. Plenty of other networks on the internet, streaming networks, like Goom.com and others use the Omnia One Multicast. Powerful processor. Hey, with different software, it's an AM processor, it's an FM processor. But with the Omnia Multicast in there, it's the Omnia One Multicast and just does a great job. It has an interesting technology that at low bit rates actually makes voices much more intelligible with fewer artifacts on low bit rate streams. All right, check them all out on the web at omniaaudio.com. Stay tuned. We're going to give away an Omnia AXE license at the end of the show. All right, back at it now with Kirk and Chris Tarr and Tom Ray. All right, Chris, let's put you on the spot here. You have some show and tell for us.
Tell
us
do.
What you've got.
Well, just
remember it's a family show, Chris.
We were talking about for the movie before. Excuse me while I whip this out. I found this. I was looking for a new voltmeter, and I found this and ordered it, and I thought it was just a fantastic deal. It's made by a company called X-Tech, which is now owned by FLIR, the thermometer and heat guys. And this model is, I got to pull it up here because I forgot the model number. This model is an EX230, $89.99. Now, what's cool about this is it not only has the regular features that you'd see on a voltmeter, but it also has a built-in infrared thermometer on here. So you can push this button and point the infrared thermometer, which is radio guys know pretty handy when you're working on AM arrays and even trying to find components that are failing, being able to use that thermometer, the sensors on top here, is great for troubleshooting. But not only that, but it also came with the temperature probe for it as well. So you can actually plug it in and it has a temperature probe here where you can measure temperature of components. So for $89, you got a multimeter that has all the regular functions that you'd expect on a multimeter, including a backlight, and then the built-in infrared thermometer and the temperature sensor, all included. And I was just amazed at how inexpensive that was for what you get. So that was my first find was this, and I got mine at Newark, online newark.com. And again, the model number is the EX320, and it's got all these cool built-in features for what I thought was a real reasonable price. Then the second thing I have, just real quick, is if you've been following on Facebook, I think I've also talked about it on Twitter. I'm finally getting my ham radio station put back together. I've got the HF rig set up. I actually made a few contacts, but I've been kind of putting the parts together. And I got my microphone in the mail today that I got on eBay. It's a Heil HM Pro. And I thought, the Bob Heil fans out there would enjoy this. This is the microphone with the DX element in it. That has that kind of penetrating sound to it, push talk button. So I'm looking forward to later on hooking this up and getting on the air a little bit and see what it does. But this week I've got this coming, and I also got a sound card interface so that I could do some of the digital modes on the lower frequency. So I'm pretty excited about that. I just, as soon as I got the ham rig put together, I started ordering the accessories, and I was all excited because I knew this was waiting for me at home today. And I got home and cracked open the Heil mic, and I almost was going to cancel on Tort so I could go play with this, but I thought better of it, decided to wait. So those are my two show and tell items today.
When are you going to use that mic for your appearances on Tort?
You know what? I don't know that this would sound very good for Tort, because this is really more for lower bandwidth, you know, tighter bandwidth applications, audio bandwidth applications. So, although this is, I think this does have the Pro element in it, so it might probably sound okay. I'd have to change the pinout, because it's got, since it's four ham radio, it's actually has a 4-pin connector on the bottom to include the closure for the push to talk.
Ah,
okay. So I would have to find a way to my new toy, and then I drop it. I would have to find a way to go
better that way.
Figure out the pinouts, and I have to come up with a new connector to do an adapter for it. But yeah, it's a great little microphone. I can't wait to use it on the air.
Need to get a nice mic boom for that, Chris.
Yeah, that's the next thing. You know, that's the thing about ham radio is you could really start to spend, and you know that's. And really, you know, it started out where a good friend of mine got me a great deal on an older Yaesu FT107, which is an oldie but a goodie. And it started with that. And then I came with the stock mic. I'm like, you know what? I'd really like a better microphone. So I got that. Then I went, you know, I'd really like to do the digital mode. So I went and got the sound card interface. And so, you know, now I've got, had to get, you know, find an older computer to set up for it. And so it's getting to be, you know, starting to grow. Oh, yeah, I need an antenna tuner, too. So I went and got an automatic antenna tuner. So, I need at some point, I really need to put my foot down and go, okay, no more. Let's play with it for a while.
This is my fear about ham radio. You know, I passed the general exam up there at the Twit brick house. And so I'm really wanting to get into this, and I've been watching eBay and even looking on Craigslist and checking out some of the the guys that sell new ham equipment, and I'm thinking, okay, I can probably afford one of those ICOM IC718 HF radios, but I see, you know, plenty of used radios and such, but then I think, well, wait a minute, I buy this and I'm still going to buy a power supply for it, because you know a lot of these ham radios run off 12 volts and you got to supply them with 20 or 25 amps. So, you know, there's a couple of hundred bucks right there for a power supply. And then I thought, well, and I'm going to need a coax. So that's not so bad. I can get some of that. But then I got to get an antenna. I can make my own antenna, I suppose, or I could buy one of these, you know, pre-made antenna kits. And you're looking anywhere from, you know, making an antenna for $50 to spending upwards of $450 or $500 for a multi-band antenna. And then I'm sure there's more to it than that I'm not even thinking of right now.
You need an antenna tuner. And of course, at some point, you're going to want to get an antenna analyzer so you can see what that antenna is really doing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think, you know, on the other side of that, though, like, you know, I still haven't spent a lot of money. I mean, most of the stuff was eBay purchases and the rig was real reasonable. And I just have a wire antenna up on the roof that I use for an antenna for 40 through, it kind of works on 80, so 80 through 10. And, you know, but I didn't spend a lot of money on it. I was pretty frugal when it came to putting it together. And I think that's one of the great things about ham radio is you can go and spend a lot of money and have a really nice station, or you can do something basic and okay, you won't be doing a whole lot of DX chasing, but you have as good a shot as anybody of getting out there making contacts. I've jumped on a couple of nets already, and I'm not going to be able to out contest anybody with this station. It's a couple hundred, you know, it's 100 to 150 watts into wire antenna, but you know, it's just fun to sit there and spin the knob and jump in and have a little fun. And I think probably total I've spent maybe $200-$300. So, you know, there you can do it inexpensively and still put something together that'll get you on the air.
Oh, and even a modest station you can have a lot of fun with. I mean, I've got a couple of funky wire antennas out in the backyard. Heck, I got my Japanese QSL card that way. I bumped into a guy in Japan one night. We could barely hear each other, but we talked. And the other one was the Cook Islands, which I didn't even know where the Cook Islands were. I had to look that one up.
Oh, dude, I've been there.
No kidding.
Yeah, I've been to, well, it's a whole bunch of islands. I mean, 30 or some islands, and about 15 of them are inhabited. And yeah, I've been to the island of Rarotonga, which is the main island of the Cook Islands. It's the only one that's not entirely flat. The rest of the islands are very low, but the Rarotonga's got a mountain in the middle. We were trying to figure out how to provide, this is kind of an interesting radio story in itself. The government of the Cook Islands had put out a request. Hey, are there any broadcasters out there interested in locating in the Cook Islands and providing radio service to the Cook Islands? We would probably have some tax advantages for you. Turns out that there already was a broadcaster on the island, a commercial broadcaster, fully properly licensed, but they felt that this guy was getting too big for his britches. And he needed a little competition because he was bullying the government officials around, demanding this, demanding that, and being the only broadcaster on the island. So, for the chain of islands. So, I went along with a couple business partners to look at could we make any money here? Could we have a viable operating FM station here in Rarotonga? And so we had a delightful time trying to figure out how are we going to best serve the island. And we could either put a transmitter up on the mountain in the middle of the island. But that presented a whole slew of problems. There's no power up there, you know, and getting to, I mean, it was a mountain peak like this. I don't know how you get up there. And the other way was to put about, we did a whole topo map of the island and looked at where the hills and mountains were. There's a one road that rings the whole island. And we found like 5 points. If we could put low power transmitters with dual Yagi antennas up and down the road at these 5 points around the island, we'd cover 99% of all the people on Rarotonga. But of course, I had to try to make a business case. Could we sell enough advertising? And it came down to if we worked really hard and got everybody to advertise, we could squeak by. And that just sounded like too much work.
Well, it's also fun about ham radio is you meet the darndest people. We had a VE session at the club meeting the other night, and guy came in to take the general test. So, not a problem. Gave him the general test, got him all set up. He came back. We go to correct the test. I looked at his name, and he had a lanyard with a badge around it. And I glanced at the badge, which was from the local hospital. I looked at him. I said, "You were the assistant surgeon on my wife's recent ankle surgery." there's her doctor's assistant was right there taking his general test. He passed.
How about that?
It was like, excuse me, the people you run into.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I it's funny because I've been in March, had a license for 10 years. And it's funny how it kind of ebbs and flows. You know, for a while I really get into it and then it kind of ebbs away and I move on to other things. And I've been without an HF radio for a while and I had this opportunity and put it in. And all of a sudden I got geeked up again. It's like, oh man, this is a blast. And I'll tell you, it's a lot of fun. Even, you know, there are a lot of times where I don't even get on the air. I just sit there and listen to some of the things going on. And it's just, it really is. It's a fun hobby. And a lot of what I've learned in radio has applied to ham stuff. And a lot of what I learned with ham stuff is applied to radio. So it's a real nice hobby to have that dovetails well with what I do for a living. So, it's a lot of fun. And Tom's right. Some of the people that I've met have just been fantastic. You will meet a nicer group of people. You know, they I don't know how many times, you know, I've gone to help somebody or somebody's come and helped me or loaned equipment out or, you know, has offered advice. So, you know, it really is a lot of good people involved.
You know, my favorite is finding someone on the air who's kind of a newbie and kind of a novice, and they're real nervous. And you sit there and you take the time. And the funny thing is, they actually come out and they thank you and they say, you know, thanks for being so patient. It's like, hey, I was a newbie once too. You know, this is fun. Let's have some fun with it. You don't want to take your enthusiasm and make it go away. The idea is to get you really into it. So it's a hoot. And some of the stories you hear, I had a guy one night I was talking to out in Ohio. He had me on the floor. I was laughing so hard. He was a retired gentleman, got a job with the local parks department, and started telling me about the fact he was learning how to drive one of those zero-turn lawnmowers. And he had me on the floor, the stuff he ran over, the stuff he ran into. What a hoot.
Well, let's move on. We have there's another article in Radio World Online. I really like the job that these guys do. If you hadn't noticed, Laura Meir is a young engineer, and she hopes she's going to be a guest on our show one time. And she has written an article about apps for engineers, Android phones and Android tablets. Let's have a look here and zoom in on the first one of these apps. I don't think I've used any of these apps yet. Maybe you guys have. But the first one is an audio test tone generator. Now
that looks handy. That looks really handy.
Yeah. Of course, you kind of want. Is the quality any good? Well, does it be? I mean, are you measuring, THD with this, or are you just trying to get something through a system to troubleshoot it? And I think that, you know, that's where it comes in. You want to get some audio through a system to troubleshoot it. And it's useful to put a sine wave through at different frequencies. And it's useful to put a square wave in and see what it comes out as. You can tell a lot about how well an analog circuit is working by that. And then it's also useful to put either white or pink noise or brown noise, which I don't think I've used in a long time,
What the heck is brown noise?
I used to know. I knew it one time.
It's brown note.
Yes.
It's what you get from a UPS truck.
Yeah. Do you guys have any novel uses for tones, tone generators? You know, what are some real typical troubleshooting instances?
Well, you know, when you're trying to figure out where audio is coming from, you know, you can send a tone down the line and trace it back. Also, for example, I had an audio pair going out to our transmitter site that was questionable. So I swept it with audio tones to get the frequency response and found out at the time that actually there was somewhere in the middle, the lines were shorted together and therefore was sending audio over both pairs in mono. And I found that out by sending a tone. So, you know, there's still uses for tones. Not as much anymore because you're not required to do proofs or anything, but it's still good to make sure your stuff's working. And as we go to digital, less and less, you're going to have really a need for tones.
Yeah, and you might find the square wave portion of that handy at the transmitter site with an AM transmitter to see if you've got some issues going on in the modulator or see if you have any tilt in the chain that needs to be adjusted out because that could affect your peak modulation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I failed to mention the name of this first app when we first mentioned it. It's called Audio Test Tone Generator. It's in the Google Android Marketplace, and it's from Digital Antics Limited. It costs $7.99. Seems like that's probably the least I would have ever paid for a tone generator.
Here's an app, as we're talking about apps, that I'm looking at for my iPhone. It's called iCircuit. Let me see if I can get it. Yeah, it's not going to work. You can kind of see it there. And what it is you can design circuits and actually run them and simulate them. So as you build things, you can build it on this simulator and watch it work. And it shows you current flow. It'll show you where current's not flowing. It'll show you where there's issues in the circuit. And it's a great way to kind of test. You know, if you want to be thinking of something you want to try as a circuit, you could test it out and run it and see how it's going to perform. That one's real handy. And then another one, too, that I just found, and I think you can get it for Android as well, but I've got it on my iPhone and my iPad, is so it's pretty pricey, but somebody put together the complete FCC rules for radio, for broadcast. And you can, I'm looking here, see if I can bring it up. I think it's under reference. Yeah, CFR 47. And it's in form, and they update it as the code changes. You can download updates, and they update what it's for. And again, you can't really see that, but it's got the telecommunication laws on it. And you can get it for iPhone or iPad. So it's another real handy one.
Well, another real handy one I found for a ham radio, there's actually a couple of them out there. It's a repeater database that it senses where you are. It locates where you are, and you tell it, find all the 2-meter repeaters within 30 miles of where I am, and it lists them all by frequency. It's the coolest thing.
Hmm. The next item on that list was a spectrum analyzer. Unfortunately, it's not an RF spectrum analyzer. It's an audio spectrum analyzer. Still can be handy. Let's have a look at that, though. This is called – I just lost the page. I know it's on the screen. This is called Speedy Spectrum Analyzer by Electron Chaos. That's funny. You know, one company, Digital Antics. The other company, Electron Chaos. Sounds like – these sound like punk band names, right? So this has a lot of great reviews. It does have a lot of info on the screen, so it's probably better on a tablet. Again, this is for the Android platform, it does both logarithmic and linear frequency axes, supports pinch to zoom on any signal section, It has a dynamically adjusting FFT size up to 16,034 bins. That's for 2 to 3 hertz of accuracy. And it does that automatically based on the size of the screen, of you know, the range that you're looking at. I wonder, though, how do you make sure you're getting, you know, how do you get good quality audio into there? Are you going in through the mic input, or is there some kind of USB device that, you know, might be a bit more accurate in translating analog audio?
I tell you, the handset microphone, I wouldn't trust that at all. Oh my God.
Yeah. They do use the microphone input when available for those. And then a lot of those programs, I don't know about that one in particular, but I actually have one for Mac. That's the same way. That's a pretty high-end spectrum analyzer, audio spectrum analyzer. And it actually allows you to run, it has a setup where you can actually run tests and calibrate it and then set the calibration in the program so you can overcome deficiencies in your sound card. So typically that's how those work is, you know, you can either use the built-in microphone or you can plug in an external one and then calibrate it.
And I can see it that working to some degree. That of course, if the mic, you know, rolls off at 8.5 kilohertz, and that's it, well, there's no amount of tweaking you're going to get. You know, you're going to be getting 13 kilohertz out of the mic. But certainly for anomalies, you know, within its range, you could use that all right. But I just that is one gorgeous display. If Burke wants to put that up again, that a Speedy Spectrum Analyzer, that's just so pretty. And you could analyze. This is for audio, but if you wanted to look at a pure tone going in, and you're putting, you know, using the tone generator just above this, just before this, to make a tone going in and look at what's coming out, you can tell some interesting things about the kinds of distortion that are in a given circuit. You know, there was a time, sure, when I first started engineering, that we were always using the Potomac Instruments test sets. That's what so many broadcasters used, and they were expensive, right? What, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for a set of the PI, you know, the tone generator and the distortion analyzer. And then after a while, I got to using a small portable CD player with a set of tones on a CD. I think we ended up buying the disc from the NAB or from some other manufacturer and having all these tones available, including complicated noise sources like what they call USASI noise. I recall that was used for measuring AM compliance with NRSC. So now we go to a device like your phone. You've already got the phone, and if the audio output of it is good, again, you're probably not going to be measuring distortion with this, because the distortion coming out of the phone is going to be high enough to where it's, you know, going to be kind of meaningless. But I just think this is really interesting to be able to have a device, have device and software that makes your device do all these different things. This Speedy Spectrum Analyzer is $4.99, the cheapest spectrum analyzer you'll find. You know, I think there's some free ones out there too, but they're somewhat limited. What do you guys use in the field for remoting into PCs or Macs? Do you use VNC on a phone?
Yes, I do that all the time. Yep.
VNC, and also they have an app for iPhones and iPads. Log Me In if anybody's used that.
Sure, sure. Do you find it, are you using the free version of Log Me In, or are you paying for service?
You can buy the, at least last time they've changed it, but you can buy the app and that works with the free accounts. So
okay,
you can use the freebies.
Gotcha. I found them a bit hard to use on something the size of a phone, but I've done this too, and it does make getting into things remotely pretty cool. I know that my friend Matt Aaron, who's the engineer for the Dave Ramsey show, one time had misconfigured one of the settings in his Axia system, and they were out on remote. I think they were in Dallas, and Dave Ramsey was trying to do, you know, a national on 500 affiliates, a national call-in show, and he wasn't getting the right audio back. So Matt says, "Oh, I know what I did." And so he whips out his phone and he remotes VNC into one of his Axia devices and changes the subscription number, and bam, it worked fine. And so, you know, after the commercial break, you know, Dave Ramsey was back up with his audio. So the point is, VNC, you know, a valuable thing to have and to use, or Log Me In. I noticed that Laura, I'm sorry, go ahead.
As I say, I have in my hand right here, actually, if you look, you can see the meters for my Burke on my iPhone. I can actually turn my transmitters on and off and you know, see when alerts are going on and have complete control of my transitor site right from my phone using VNC and the Burk Autopilot app.
Oh, I do that too. Isn't it great? Somebody calls you and you're in the middle of nowhere. You bring it up. Instead of having to deal with a hysterical person on the phone, you just sit there and look at everything at the transmitter site that you want to look at, take control over it, and get the job done.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Guys, we've kind of had a free-for-all here on our technical topic discussions, and we're going to have to draw to a close. And before we do, we're going to pick a winner for the Omnia AXE software. What the deal is, I've been tweeting that the show is going to start. I try to tell you something about the show. If you follow at K Harnack on Twitter, or if you follow the new one for the show, which is at Tort Show on Twitter, you'll be connected. Obviously the at Tort Show, I try to keep that to just to announcements about the show. If you will retweet that to your followers, hey, we're going to get more listeners. And I think we already have gotten a lot more listeners and viewers to the show, a lot more fans, and I sincerely appreciate you retweeting that. To thank you for your time, I wish I could give one to everybody, but I can't. I can give away one fully licensed copy of Omnia AXE. It's not a demo license. It's a full working copy, and this is software that does audio processing and audio encoding into MP3 or AAC or HEAAC or even HEAAC V2, which are previous guest, why is this name slipping my head? Our guest from the guy that talked about the streaming audio. Yeah. I keep wanting to say Olkowski. It's not Olkowski. It's Greg Oganowski.
Oh, Greg Oganowski. Okay. That was the guy you're talking about.
Oh, thanks to you guys. Of course, I didn't give you any good hints. Sorry. Greg Oganowski recommends HEAAC V2 as being really the thing to stream with. If you got to stream at low bit rates for cell phones, like in the 40 and 50 kilobit per second area, use HEAAC V2. Well, the point is Omnia AXE does that too, and we'll send it on out to your servers for distribution. All right, let's give one away, and my hands are a bit tied here, but I need a number. Let's go with a low number here this time. A number between 1 and 12. Who wants to call it out? Chris Tarr, close your eyes. Give me a number from 1 to 12.
4.
4. 1, 2, 3, 4. The winner is Dan Hill. Dan Hill.
Oh, hey, what he said. All right.
Yeah, his Twitter handle is @HitNation. @HitNation, Dan Hill. Well, Dan, congratulations. You're the winner of an Omnia AXE. So Well, I'll be in touch, Dan, or you can contact me, and why don't you direct message me and give me your info. That'd be good, and I'll get back with you with all the particulars. All right, that's our show. Coming up in the next coming weeks, we're going to have Laura Meir as a guest. She agreed to be a guest. Hopefully, we'll have Jeff Littlejohn with Clear Channel as a guest. I think he's going to be terribly interesting. If we can ever get Tony Gervasi out of the land of no internet, then he's going to join us as well. And it's terribly interesting. So we'll also take your suggestions. Hey, in the on the twit.tv website for our show, and that's twit.tv/twert, or This Week in Radio Tech, /twert, under each show, there is a discussion area. And this, I think, is a lot easier to use than the discussion area on our original website, thisweekinradiotech.com. So if you want to make comments, do it there. And I think they'll get to, we'll be able to reply to it more easily, check it more often, and so if you have comments about the show, please do it there at twit.tv/twert. And then go to the episode that you want, and you can make your comments using the discuss commenting system. There you go. There's last week's show in beautiful, glorious black and white. Hey, I want to thank Tom Ray for being with us from the Hudson Valley of New York. Tom, glad you're back.
Yeah, me too, Kirk. Glad to be back. You know, what I was looking for before, I was looking for that Japanese QSL card, but I found one that was kind of cool. As we know, I work for WOR. There was a special event station on one day.
Yeah.
Oh. WZOR. Boy, did we have a good chuckle over that one.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. Well, thank you for being with us, Tom, and we hope you can come back next week.
I shall be here.
And Chris Tarr is with us from Muckwonago, Wisconsin. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks again for having me.
And hey, send me a soda stream. Send me a drink from your soda stream.
I will. Well, I promise you, we will do an on-air demonstration here one of these days.
And I figured out a great way to save myself thousands of dollars on a ham setup. I'm just going to visit one of you guys, and sure. Just get my ham fix from your shack.
And that's not, not a problem. But you're going to get frisked on your way out.
And then he's going to check you for equipment, if you know what I'm saying.
I'd be worth it to leave twice. I don't know. And thanks to our sponsor, Omnia Audio, makers of a lot of audio streaming processing to make your stream sound just beautiful. Thanks also to Burke at the Twit Network for switching the show. We appreciate you. Appreciate you in the chat room. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.